So in this module, we're going to actually share with you the third principle to make your performance even faster. So this is media usage, how we could work smartly with media message. So as you probably remember from the previous module, we actually had some statistics, right? We're showing the typical payload. We're showing the number of average size in a page. And if you still remember, the number one concern or the number one resources that we're using is images. So we're going to actually talk a lot about how to work with image, how to make sure we don't waste any network download, how to make sure we could work with images more efficiently. So let's start with. So we're going to talk about how to optimize media usage, and we're going to talk about why we should use CSS3. So how to optimize the media usage. Let's actually look into that. Now, this is actually an average number of media resources data we took a while ago, so the number could be actually increased. This is on the top 100,000 websites. So it shows it has at least 58 piece of media resources we're working with. So this is a pretty big number, right? And with all the resources, what we could do to make it better? Because that's a typical size, 58, right? So your app could be maybe even using more resources or less resource. But one thing we feel it's important to share with you is use the native image resolution. So a lot of times you probably will see for the same page, you actually will have maybe a regular size kind of image you will show for a particular your product. And then maybe you have a lot of thumbnails, a smaller scale image, or make it even icons, or you maybe even have the same image but in a different size. Now, just for the convenience, a lot of times we're just getting the image as it is from the server, right? So let's look at this example. So if you look at this code, basically we're showing, you know, this is our original image from the server. It's a logo image. The size is 500 by 400. And then for our particular need, based on the size of our device, we only require the size to be 50 by 40. So it's actually 100 times smaller, right? However, for the convenience, a lot of times we just say, let's just get that original big image from the server and then let the browser do the decoding and then resize it for you, right? I mean, it will always work. Yes, in a way, for the convenience, it's working, and you probably don't have to worry about that. But do you know you're actually wasting quite a bit of resource just to getting a huge image, whereas when you display onto your app, it's only 1%, 100 times smaller than that. So in this case, you really have to watch out say, for example, this is just one example, right? You may have this kind of example happen on your page multiple times. Think about 58 piece of information. You may have it repeated, I don't know, maybe just 5 or 6 times, right? And that's actually going to contribute to quite a bit of unnecessary network downloading and decoding and resizing, right? So if you can, you should always think about, say, if I only need a 40 by 50, then do yours in user graphic 2 or do it by hand to downsize into 50 and 40 instead of getting a big image from the web. Okay, so based on that, we did some test. This is a very simple site. If you remember, you attended some of our build conference. We actually have a build website, and it contains about 30, 40 pieces of information. So we have a little head image, and this little head image is actually, you could, it's touchable, and you could rotate. It has about 10 images underneath that. And then on the bottom of the page, you see there's a lot of thumbnails. There's a little smaller scale image to work with. So what we do is it's a benchmark. So we actually all choose, just take the image the way it is. Don't do any of the resize and then test the result. Versus, you know, we actually resize everything into the exactly required size and then do the test. So The result is very interesting. Let's actually look into the benchmark result. So we're actually measuring the visual throughput as well as CPU utilization, because we already said CPU utilization is such an important factor to impact your battery life as well as your performance. So if you look at, if I'm just using the regular size, whatever I get from server, and then showing this particular image, we actually see the time difference here. It took about 1.8 seconds to loading the whole page so that everything is actually arrived in the client side and we could display. And then versus the right size, which means scaled, we actually scaled image manually into the right size. Then it will take 625 milliseconds, which is almost like three times as shorter than before.
What are the charts here? Where are they being generated from?
Yes, they actually use the well-known F12 tools, UR responsiveness.
Oh, nice.
Yes, this is actually go back to JD's demo. Remember in module 2, we actually spent quite a bit of time to showing you how to do that. Yeah. So this is exactly using F12 tool, using the UR responsiveness to grab all the data. So, and it's very easy to use, as you could see. Okay, so I'm sure you could do the same when you go home, right? Okay, so the other things that you probably want to pay attention is, look at this, the upper part of the diagram. The blue coding, the light blue coding, which is spent on the image decoding. Look at it, because you just want to take it for the convenience, you don't want to resize your image by itself. So it takes bunch of time, bunch of CPU time to do the image decoding. With compared to all the images has been scaled to the right size, you see very minimal decoding here. So again, go back to the CPU utilization, the scaled image is much better. And in terms of time, the page loading, the right size image is much better. So this is actually a pretty big tip to share with you. I've been talking about to different kind of companies when I do the workshop with them. They all ask me same questions, because really thumbnails, you know, same image, but a display with different size, with different device, with, you know, different nature, it happen, right, all the time. So you have to be careful about that. All right, so that's one thing. The other things you may wondering is, how about their memory allocation, right? What is about how much memory they're using? So again, let's go back to this particular result. Again, this is using one of the tools RJD shared as a task manager. And you could see, very handy, you could see when you have all the image with original size, it takes about 66 megabytes. Whereas with the resized, the right sized image, then you will see it's only 37.4 megabytes. So it's almost half the size if you compare to the previous, you know, just take it for granted kind of approach. And then maybe you will say, okay, it's only 30 something, you know, megabytes, no big deal. But think about it, if you're using a low end device, right? If your memory is extremely constrained, then 30 megabytes is quite a lot. Right, and then it's something is totally worth your effort to make it, you know, reduced as much as possible. So again, this is our first tip to share with you. If you can resize image to the exactly required size to avoid any unnecessary decoding and memory usage. Now, next, you probably will ask me. You said, "Oh, okay, I have 58." You know, typical kind of image resource, right? How should I get all the images? Should I get one at a time, or are there any other things I could do? Okay, so let's take a look. So for example, nowadays is we're all very popular, use all kinds of social network, right? And you know, we're using all kinds of little icons to represent the social media we're using. And this is trying to do is with 100 those icon images represent different social media and different services. So when you look at that, it's of course it's a little crazy, right? I mean, 1,000 images, you know. Okay, what are you gonna do with that? Are you gonna try to getting those icon one at a time, or are you gonna group them together into a certain size? Now, so for our benchmark, we use about 30 to 40 images, right? That's actually pretty typical, because the average size is 58, right? So look at that, and there must be a good way of doing things, right? So if you look at a quick example, say we have, in this case, we have about six icons, right? So scenario one is we're doing downloading one icon at a time, right? So six images, we need to create six connections. So as a result, you have total of 96 kilobytes of the data you need to download, right? So this is the first approach. A second approach is we should be more smart, right? Why we have to do it one at a time? Six images is no big deal. But if you think about a previous case, 1,000 image or even 30 to 50 images, that's quite a lot. We should have a better way to group them together. And then basically, you know, you transfer one larger image and then you only create one connection. Hence, in this particular case, as an end result, you're only using 21K download. So you probably should think about it to group them together. And this is a technique called with a sprite image in the past. Now, there are multiple ways you could actually do the sprite images, right? You could use some sprite tool to do that. However, when you use those tools, be careful. You need to look in to see those tools will generate any space. There's a little spacing between them because not all the images are regular, right? So you will have some spacing. So by then, you should think about if you could use some simple graphical tools or using your own tools to make less spacing between them as much as possible. That way you will get a smaller sprite combined image to download. Hence, it will save you the network time and the number of bytes downloaded. So think about use your own tool instead of sprite tool. So this is one tip we want to share with you, how to getting the number of image. So again, you based on that particular same site, we did another benchmark. Okay, so in this case, we are actually, you know, using one thing is try to use uncombined way, right? We have 30 images, we download one at a time, right? And the other way, second way is obviously combine all the images and the downloader. So the performance-wise, again, we use F12 dual responsiveness, check the CPU utilization. What you will see is the uncombined way, it takes about 210 milliseconds load. And then whereas a combined way, you have 164 milliseconds. So again, you actually save quite a bit, at least I would say 50 milliseconds here, right? So 50 milliseconds here and there is actually going to at least cost you, let's say, 5% of your performance. So that's actually quite a lot. And then if you really think about the whole idea here is being smart about downloading your resource online, right? Like we said, the fewer number of bytes you download, the better your network response, your page loading time will be. So always remember that a particular concept. It's always good to keep in mind.
Well, with the Sprite 2, you're able to avoid the parallel concurrent connection.
Right.
So you can have those other connections available for other resources. So instead of downloading 100 icons using your six concurrent connections for each set of the icons, you can just use one connection and then the other concurrent connections can be used for scripts or, or other resources.
Other resources, right. Exactly. Like JavaScript or some other large piece you may want to download. Yes, exactly. So again, I want to really emphasize one more time. Your mileage might be different. This is actually from our own benchmark. This is our data. You should always try it in your production environment. So let me just emphasize one more time. Okay, so next, we're going to actually talk about, this is really a classical discussion. So JD, I remember quite a few years ago, we had this kind of talk. Right. Should we use PNG or should we use JPEG?
PNG.
And some people say, no, I love to stay with a JPEG. You know, why is that? So usually, you know, when I go to a conference or whatever, I ask the audience, and it's always roughly half and half, right? So let's sort of look into that. Which one should we use, right? So if you look into the PNG and the JPEG, if you have to have, say, high resolution kind of images, right? You need to have your photographs, your landscape, your faces, you need a better resolution, then it's probably a natural choice for you to use JPEG. However, for the rest of the other images, like logos, charts, graphs, screen snapshots, these doesn't require this kind of high-resolution images. You could actually very safely stay with PNG, right? So in the past, a lot of time we say, if you don't need to use any high-resolution images, you know, stay with PNG. It's always good. And which is quite true for a very long time, you know, up to like maybe 2 years ago or maybe even 1 year. That's actually very true. So, but I want to share with you some of the progress we did, and we'll share with you some of the results to see, you know, if there's any change. So let's look into a little more detail about, let's actually step back a little bit, because I actually feel a lot of times people are confused about the download size versus the memory size. So a download size, it's easy, right? You could think about, you know, I have an image. The dimension is, in this example, is 686 by 1024. It's quite a large image. With the disk space, will take about 500.5 megabytes, right? Half a megabytes. Okay, so not small, but not extremely huge. But if you think about it, this is your final memory size. No, you're wrong. This is just the download size. So in reality, what is your memory size is your width times your height and times 4. So basically, all the disk size image is going to times 4. That will be your truly memory size. So in this case, it's 2.67 megabytes decoded. Okay, so somebody may still remember at the beginning, we talked about the statistics. What is the average size per page? 1.7 megabytes, right? That's the average size. And here we have a, you know, not so huge image. We already get a 2.67 megabytes. So 2.67 megabytes, that's the data you need to do decode after you get it from the net. So this is non-trivial. You really should think about the memory size instead of just think about the download size. Okay, so one thing to sort of clarify with you, understand what memory size is. Okay, second thing we want to talk about is a lot of people want to understand how does image downloaded? You know, how does this really happen? What are the process or what are the procedures involved? So let's take a look at this diagram. So I get a network request, and I'm getting some kind of image. And then the image will do a partial response, right? So even though the image is a partial response, it's pretty good, we could start doing decoding. So that is all work. And then another little bit of image back, you could do decoding as well. And then keep on doing until the image finish loading, right? You finish all the decoding. And then next step is you need to really look into how to process that, right? For example, converting the colors and so on. This is how you do it in a processing stage. Afterwards, then you will say, okay, pretty much I could actually, you know, leave the GPU to take care of the rest of them. So I need to spend some time to copy it to the GPU and then finally display, right? This is a whole sort of like a procedure when you see an image from download to display. Now, if you look at some of the things, you know, which we've been watched pretty closely, like HTML, CSS, and the image loading, right? This is what happened. So you have all those resources loading, and you also have the CPU usage. Here, different color represents different thing. The green area represents a decoding, how much time is going to take from CPU perspective. And the blue area is actually how the US thread is working. So what I want you to pay attention is also there's another piece, which is GPU, right? So it does take some time to for the CPU to do the decoding, right? As we indicated here. And it also takes little time. It's actually, you know, it's kind of gap. It's a break, right? Here, from a decoding and the time to spend to copy the GPU, and then GPU could, you know, process afterwards. So this is another kind of little, like, I wouldn't say bottleneck, but this is another pause, right? Because you have to spend a time to copy to the GPU. So when you look at a whole thing, there are a few things, you know it's going to cost resource, right? Image decoding, CPU time, time to copy to the GPU. That's another little time you need to spend. And then that's a processing time, right, to do the color conversion. So can we do better than that? All right. So let's take a look. Now, for any browsers, let's say IE10 and below, everything I talk about is true. This is the normal processing. And then you did go through all the steps. However, with the new improvement in IE 11, we do have some progress here. So for one thing, basically the partialing, the partial data, partial loading and decoding, that particular time will be reduced because we're looking at, especially using JPEG as example, we have a smaller size. And as well as because of smaller size, so CPU decoding time will be reduced as well. And then the other thing we did here is, you know, we actually spent less time to copy to the GPU. And then instead of doing all the color conversion processing, which is normally would take some CPU time, we actually say we're going to leave it at GPU to take care of that. We're going to do this processing on GPU instead of waste some of the CPU time because the GPU is actually more resourceful, right? So again, the decoding time is shortened and the copy to the GPU time is also reduced. And we leave the processing time for the GPU to handle, which is more resourceful. So as the end result, we actually did improve the performance of JPEG download to display quite a bit on IE11, right? So if you ask me, what should I do if I have IE11, if I want to use JPEG? Yes, I think it's a not bad idea to use JPEG on IE11. And so you probably don't trust me. You said, oh, why is that? I want to actually see it. You know, is it really working on IE11? Okay, let me share with you some of the benchmark. Again, let's go back to this particular data. And we're using the same site. We just talked about it before. And one of them is totally, the upper one is using all PNG images. And the bottom one actually uses JPEG images. And we actually using Task Manager. And we see the result. Actually, you know, the total size of memory allocation is actually different. For PNG, it takes 51 megabytes. And for the JPEG, you know, which is actually higher resolution image, you would think it will actually take more memory. As a matter of fact, it's not bad at all. It takes about 45 megabytes. So if you compare to PNG, it's about 6 megabytes less, which is, I think it's quite good. It's pretty critical, especially for low-end devices. And the 6 megabytes, that's quite a lot. You're saving the memory allocation here, so you could actually getting the other resources done. So if you can, you're using IE11, and you could pretty comfortable to use JPEGs. Okay, so this is a little change, PNG and JPEG. And again, this is a very interesting topic. I think the discussion will be going on, and maybe a few months or a year from now, maybe we have a different result.
The discussion on memory versus download size reminds me a lot of JavaScript, download size of the gzipped code versus the time it takes to actually parse that JavaScript. Mm-hmm. It's kind of something very similar, where it may download quickly, but on a low-end device, it's still going to take time to parse that JavaScript or parse that CSS.
Right.
And so reducing that there can give you a benefit too. So.
Exactly. Absolutely. Very true. All right. Data URL.
All right, so I'm going to be talking over on this next section over using data URIs. So before we talked about reducing your HTTP requests with a sprite, so a single image instead of hundreds or potentially more HTTP requests. Now we're going to talk about avoiding HTTP requests completely, so embedding the image directly in the page. And you can do that with something called a data URI. A data URI is a Base64 encoded image. The reason the slide here says for a small image is because the data URI, because it's Base64 encoded, inflates the size of the image. So if you have a 0.5 kilobyte file, when you convert that to a data URI, it can be double that or more. So this works great for small files. So like your little icons, indicators on buttons, things like that. This is where you could use a data URI. And this avoids the overhead of the request and allows it to just load instantly on the page once the page is loaded.
For a larger image, you know, over like megabytes or something.
You would not want to embed a data URI for a megabyte image in your page. Back to before where we talk about a balancing act. In this case, the balancing act is the size of the base64 encoded image versus the HTTP request overhead. And so in this case, it really works for small images. The example of that is in this slide. You can kind of see it. It starts with, instead of a normal protocol of HTTP or HTTPS, it's the data protocol. And then there's the MIME type of the image, and then the base64 encoding. And then it's the encoded image there for the rest of the URL. Let's see. This talks about the various pieces, which I've just discussed.
Particular syntax you need to sort of use. Right.
Now, you may be thinking, well, this is great. I have all these images. How do I convert my images to base64? If you're following along, you can do a search for that. There's lots of tools available for you to do this. There's also there's APIs available in JavaScript and DOM that can allow you to get this. Your favorite programming language probably has a way to get your base64 encoded version of your images. So there's lots of options out there. You don't have to sit there and try to come up with this on your own. There's lots of tools available for you.
Cool. Okay, so next, we want to actually look into SVG. Okay, SVG is very cool, right? Especially you work with, like, I still remember some of the example with HTML5 SVG usage. Say you want to get in some of the pool data based on the different states in the United States. And then you actually could use SVG to represent each of the area of that state. And then you could figure out, you know, the boundary, you know, where it is. And with SVG, it's so easy to do because all the, say, state shape is irregular. So it would be hard to work with Canvas, which you have to do a lot of mass manipulation. So SVG is totally cool. However, yes?
Well, there's also the advantage of SVG is vector.
Yeah.
And so you can, with like our big touch screens here, mm-hmm. or your tablets, mm-hmm. you can zoom in on them,
right.
And they don't pixelate. And so you
True.
Get that crisp, clean looking
right.
Image.
Extremely high resolution.
Right.
You could
zoom in. So it's
right.
very handy for maps or anything like that. Yeah.
True. However, you have to watch out, you know, the complexity of SVG passes. For example, you may use some tools, Illustrator or something, and then after two, you actually find extremely complex, large amount of kind of data there. And this is actually, you know, if you think about such a complexity SVG data, it's actually going to cost you, right? And if you want to download that or work with that, it's going to be, taking quite a bit of resource to do that. So, by saying that, you know, sometimes you just say, oh, my data is kind of complex. What I'm going to do with that, right? So in that case, you could actually find some of the external tools to reduce the SVG. You could actually make it a little less complex so that you could actually save some of the network time and the downloading time. So this is a key. So just be careful using SVG.
Right. So just like where you have minifiers for your JavaScript or your CSS, there's ways to optimize optimizers for images too. Mm-hmm. There's optimizers for SVG to help reduce the complex paths there, because it's this kind of markup that you're downloading, and the more complex your SVG image, the more markup you're going to have to download. And so being able to use gzip and being able to use an optimizer on that can help reduce the download cost of the SVG.
Exactly. So next, I want to actually, you know, talk another, which is a video, right? We actually, you know, if you're looking to a site, normally you will see a piece of video there to make the site more fun. However, a lot of people, I'm not quite sure if you tried HTML5 video tag. So if you look into that, HTML5 video tag is so easy to implement and to use. So let's actually take a quick example of this code fragment. So again, this is basically, I want to actually display a piece of video. And this is actually the video tag on the slide, which is actually showing you that this is, if you actually started with...
I can't show that slide.
Yeah. It's got the...
It's got a logo. Mm-hmm. I can't show it.
Oh, okay. So if you actually have, let's just talk through. So if you have a video tag, right, it's say, you know, square video, and then you could actually specify the video size, width and height, and then you probably could say control. Now, one of the ways to make it more user-friendly or increase the perceived performance is actually using a keyword called poster. Poster is something, is like I'm showing some kind of friendly or funny image before, so that when the video is loading or when I actually start to play that video, I will see something interesting. It's not like a totally a black kind of screen, right? That's not a very interesting. That's not nice, right? So I could actually have a little preview image, right? And then people will say, oh, this is nice. I see some image. I know this video is live or it's valid. It's going to work. So you could actually display that. And then at the same time, if the user hit on the play button, right, that's the time videos start to loading into the client side, into the browser. So you could actually really improve the perceived performance because there's an image there, and then user could click on the button, and then videos start to showing up. And then even though it takes a little while to download, but it's okay, people love that image. So really, you know, poster is a really good way for you to do a little preview. And one thing we want to actually talk a little bit is about using the HTML5 video, if you want to do the cross all browsers, you want to actually take a look at what kind of format of your video you're using. Most likely, JPEG, the MPEG-4, is going to work very well. However, depends on a particular browser. Some browser doesn't want to support MPEG-4, then you probably want to actually use fallback, use WebM, and so forth. So it is actually safe for me. I'm not doing any video display. I always keep one video format MP4, and then the other is WebM. So this is always safe. Then make sure the video could be played for all the browsers, all kind of browsers. Okay, so this is good for the video. We have some idea. Next, I actually want to talk about the plugin. So we see how powerful it is to use the HTML5 video, right? However, you still see with some old browsers, you see Flash, Silverlight, QuickTime, and all those things are still there, right? So if you can, try to minimize using it. Try to avoid using them because they are there for one thing. It's not very user-friendly, right? So if you have a browser, you have to use plugin, and you actually share a little video with your grandma. Your grandma say, hey, it asked me to download something, to install something. I have no idea how to do that. So basically, the video doesn't really give the end user really a nice experience, right? But if you're using HTML5 video or audio, then you don't need a plugin and you could show it right away, right? That's from the user perspective. The other thing is all those plugins you would think they will save you time, actually they're not. They're competing on the resources. They're competing on the network resource you try to get, and they're competing on some other internal resources as well. So overall, try to minimize the usage of plugin if you can. Try to all migrate onto HTML5 video as much as possible.
And this is also very relevant for mobile development too,
yes.
Because mobile phones and things mm-hmm. and portable devices may not have the capability to run plugins. And so being able to use HTML5 allows them to work for a wider audience.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay, so you know, we talk about quite a few things, especially work with images, media. You know, perhaps it's a good time, you know, JD, show them a web page test.
Okay.
Let's see how we could utilize those things.
So earlier I mentioned using web page test, where you can compare the download speed of your site and get a breakdown on the various techniques that you need to do to optimize your site. So like your gzip and the waterfall view of the resources downloading. So now let's take a look at that tool. So here's the demo. I'm basically I went to webpagetest.org and then I went and I'm viewing the download speed of jQuery. So jQuery is the JavaScript library that's on like what 95% of the web now, and so this is a view of that. Let's see. I'm going to just rerun the test so we can kind of see that. Actually, no, I'm just going to look at the waterfall view. So by looking at the waterfall view, before that you can see that it shows the time. to complete the first view, the time of repeat views. So remember when caching is involved, the first view, the uncached view, will take longer than the cached view. So in this case, the first view took 1.2 seconds. The repeat view took 0.5 seconds. So a little less than half, or a little more than half, the time. So that's a big win on caching whenever you have that enabled. So let's look at the waterfall view. And this is the waterfall view of the first view. But it does allow you to see resources coming in. You can see the time to first byte. So very similar to the F12 network tool where it was time to first byte, time to process the request. This is just another way to view that. So if you're not on IE or wanting to test other mobile devices, you can do that with this tool. You can test in different browsers. You can test different locations. Mm-hmm. So back to the discussion before where we were talking about your locations for CDNs, mm-hmm. this tool allows you to pick where the nearest server is so you can kind of see where the distance to your CDN affects the load time. And so in this case, this is just showing you a breakdown here. It's got the familiar lines of blue blue being content loaded. So that is like the actual resource is been loaded. Purple in this case is DOM content loaded. DOM content loaded is again where you're able to have your script be able to interact with the DOM and manipulate the page and things like that. So that's really where if you're a JavaScript developer, that's what you're looking for, to where you can first get in and start scripting the page and adding event handlers and things like that. And then the solid blue line, I believe, is the page load.
JD? I just think about it. We need a standard to standardize all the colors to represent the same
various
thing
tools
across different browser, different tools. That would be nice.
Thank goodness there is a key, though, so you're able to navigate the waterfall view. But this is a pretty handy tool that you can have in your back pocket to compare your site. And as I mentioned before, you can also do some A-B testing as well to compare your site. It also, there's abilities here to give you a grade on various components, so like your compression and your caching headers too. Web page test can allow you to do that too. So that's the demo for web page test.
Cool. So hopefully you get some idea about Medium images by using web page test. Okay, so we're gonna switch the gear just a little bit. We're gonna actually talk about CSS3. Now, CSS is actually, it's very interesting because I have been a developer for a long time. I have to confess, I'm actually kind of person kind of overlooked the CSS because I thought it's a decorative language. It's not a coding, I actually trust my JavaScript coding capability. I could do things really well, really fast, right? So all those things, it's totally actually a misconception. There's a big improvement on the CSS3 implementation. If you look at all the improvement. So let's just look at one of the examples, like CSS3 gradient, right? Think about if we don't use any of the CSS property, what we have to do is manipulating all the images, getting a bunch of images to create a gradient kind of effect. It's going to waste a lot of resource to loading all kinds of images in order to create that. Plus, you have to write a pretty fancy JavaScript to make it happen. Look at how easy it is. You could actually using CSS3 gradient. And then for anybody, it's actually lower the entry of the level for designer because you don't have to know JavaScript coding. You could use CSS. You could still use all the nice features and to make it work. And plus, all the CSS3 feature has all the, especially for IE, has all the hardware acceleration support. So you could use it pretty safely.
And you don't have to fire up your image editor. You can just use CSS. You're able to use the F12 tools to edit the DOM inspector, mm-hmm. and you can edit your gradients in real time on the page. Mm-hmm. So you can experiment and say, oh, well, I like the darker shade to start a little bit more towards the left side, or rotate it to the 90-degree angle. And you can do that all like live in the page without having to sit there and save the file and refresh the page, or sit there and create the image, save the image, mm-hmm. optimize the image, and then import the image. So it's a great time saver.
It is. Yeah. It is immediate visual effect if you change some property. And then it is, if you look at this example, it is extremely too easy to config, right? Mm-hmm. You could actually, just But one thing, sort of like, be careful is for now, still it's better to put some of the prefix to represent different major browser. And then, but always, always put a gradient because that would be a final kind of CSS feature we should use. And the configure, like JD was saying, you could, I could show you the demo later on. You could actually config different things, linear the percentage of RGB to change that.
With vendor prefixes, the idea is that they'll eventually go away. So you shouldn't lean on vendor prefixes as something as that is permanent. Mm-hmm. They're designed to be a stopgap between the time that a feature is introduced and the time that it's standardized. So when you're using vendor prefixes like the MS or WebKit or Moz, be sure to include the non-prefixed form. You may look at this and say, well, that's a lot of duplication. But there is utilities
use some tools,
to make that optimized. There's like SAS or other pre-compiled CSS helper languages out there for you that take care of all of the vendor prefixes for you. So you can, with a little bit of pre-processing, you can streamline your CSS maintenance with gradients or anything else that requires a vendor prefix.
Exactly. Okay, so not just the gradient. Same thing applied to border radius, right? Border radius is basically round at the corner, right? Think about how much work and image resource editor you have to do in order to create a round at the corner. Because I'm not a good designer. And actually, one of my designer friends says, Doris, if your image or anything is not a round at the corner, it's not a good design.
It's not Web 2.0.
Web
2.0 has
It's not a Web 2.0 look and feel. So you have to make sure it's a round at the corner, right? So you really have to sort of like run a corner. What's the easiest way to do that? A border radius, right? You just have to put the property border radius and change your particular how rounded you want it to be. Boom, you have everything there. So again, this is how you actually configure with a border radius. It could control the roundness. What's more about that is you could also leverage the transforms, right? Transforms, usually you could do it with JavaScript with all kind of images to create an effect like move, rotate, scroll. But now it's so powerful, you could have 2D and 3D transformation all use CSS3, right? And you could just follow all the nice, easy configuration parameter to do that. And now we're going to show you a demo later on show you how easy it is to do. Transitions is another example, same concept. Now we have CSS transitions, so you don't have to stay with the previous way doing the transitions. Another one is animations, because everybody thinks animations has to be writing a bunch of JavaScript code, or watch out this and that, you know. But actually, there is a CSS animation property available. So you could actually using things like keyframes in your demo and then change one like a state to the other very easily.
Right, so you can avoid downloading a big JavaScript library and just a few lines of CSS create the same kind of effect. There's even easing in and easing out properties to the animation and keyframes that we'll cover in the demo too.
Exactly. So let's actually go to the IE test drive. And some of you asked for the link. Actually, we shared in the Q&A already. Take a look. So this is, again, one of the demo to demonstrate the CSS3 new features on IE test drive. So I'm probably going to skip with a gradient, but start with the 3D transform. So what you could see here is this is a very nice tool, right? It gives you all the particular like configuration you need to work around. And then you could even say, oh, I want to rotate 3D. And I actually want to actually play with different things, different degree, different x-axis, y-axis, z-axis, right? And once you say, this is a state I like, and you could actually just copy and paste all the configuration data here, and then directly copy and paste into your code. Don't you like copying and paste? This is just so efficient, right? And you could leverage this visual tool to do that. And you don't have to play with JavaScript run again and again to take a look if that's what you want. So again, you know, and it's very fast to do. You know, if you see I change any one of them, you see how responsive it is. So that's the transforms. And then another one which I like to share with you is actually animations. And animations is the same thing. You could play with the ease in, ease out. You could have different parameters to play with. And you could play with all the things to see if that's exactly time interval you want us to do it again. And then also you could actually specify the keyframes. Okay, so with that, I'd actually like to share with you a very simple example. And this is one actually using CSS animation. There are two approaches we're doing here. One is dependent, which means I'm going to write some JavaScript code into it. So what I do is I basically create a spinner, and then that spinner is keep on rotating, right? And then I'm writing the JavaScript code. Actually, I cheated a little bit here because we're using the Windows MS CSS matrix kind of property to do that. So this is what I used to control the spinner style, and then also I'm using the transform to rotate 10 degrees at a time. So this is a totally a JavaScript kind of approach. And then the other approach we do is, let's say, forget about JavaScript, right? I'm a CSS person. So I'm just actually using very comfortably using the animation kind of CSS, which is specify the property with that spinner, and then using the keyframes and the transform from 0 degree to 360 degrees and using the transform CSS property. Okay, so let's actually take a look what's the difference here. So let it run. And you will see the first one is probably, let's actually capture some data. This is, again, your responsiveness data. And let's reload it and let it rotate for a little bit. And now you're actually seeing something, which is let me actually resizing it, just like JD showed us how to do that. So we could actually take a look just for that a little time frame. Maybe I could pick something a little further down, like here. And we see there's quite a bit of JavaScript loading, as well as the rendering time and every other things, right? And then let's actually quickly show with a CSS approach, which is totally independent of that. And again, we run the F12 tools to compare. Okay, now, again, let's actually take some data a little bit late. Take about like 1 second kind of data, expand it. And what we see here is really there's some styling going on. There's nothing on JavaScript because, you know, simply we use CSS, not any JavaScript, right? So that makes sense. That will just tells you CSS animation could be pretty powerful, especially you have a simple application like that. You don't really have to always write a JavaScript to do that. Okay, so one more piece of data I want to share with you is the result of this little benchmark. So what we see here, this is using the Windows Performance Tool. And what you see here is you will see we're comparing all the three parameters, CPU, GPU, VSync. And then for the JavaScript mode, you actually have two additional threads, HTML, UI thread, and render thread you have to work with. Whereas with the CSS case, you don't have to worry about that at all because you're not using any JavaScript here. So save the thread. Resource as well as a lot of other resource. For the GPU, CSS directly work with GPU. So compared to the JavaScript case, you have to work with a browser. So that's one more like entity you really have to work with. And then the resource wise, if you look at it, you know, this is actually the GPU utilization and two small peaks, and versus the CSS is one small peak. Okay, so you see the advantage of using all the CSS just by themselves, and they're very powerful. It's very rich. You could actually go back to the same demo I showed you and play with more CSS feature. Okay, so wrap it up. We talked about how to minimize the media, work with image more smartly, how to optimize it as much as possible. We also highly recommend you to look into CSS3 feature instead of just trust any third-party library or your code. Thank you.